Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it is Thursday, which means it's Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, and very excited to have Margaret Roberts with us, prize-winning investigative journalist, television producer in D.C. She was top editor at National Journal and Congressional Quarterly before moving into television as news director of America's Most Wanted, and in 2010... she edited the prison memoir Deadly Secrets that was Timothy McVeigh's account of the Oklahoma City bomb plot as told by fellow death row inmate David Hammer, and the Oklahoma City bombing happening April 19th, 1995, something that for a very, very long time you have been covering. And my goodness gracious, I've always had questions that as time have gone on seem to be unanswered, but boy, do you really open up so much more information. Thank you so much for being with us. And I want to start off with 1995. I was a senior in high school, and I was in high school, Carthage, Missouri, and there was a small motel near Kellogg Lake. At one point, they thought John Doe number 2 was there. I remember from the library in the high school watching live on, I think it was CNN, as the bomb squad was opening a car door, you know, sort of trying to do it from a distance and so forth. And it was all about this John Doe number 2 that was being sought out, that witnesses had seen with Timothy McVeigh after the Oklahoma City bombing. And then it just, as best as my memory from so long ago can recall, just sort of went away. And there's so much in this book to talk about. We're going to get to a limited amount of it. But let's start with John Doe number 2. Who was that and what happened with John Doe number 2?
Well, Nick, great to be with you. And that is quite a striking memory of yours, taking us right back to that moment when this story was a huge manhunt story. And actually, I witnessed this along with millions of Americans in horror that day, April 19, 1995, when the federal building in Oklahoma City was just blown up in an instant, creating, you know, a horrific catastrophe. Almost immediately, story turned into the world's biggest manhunt. And of course, having been the news director of America's Most Wanted, I was focused on this from that perspective from the very beginning. John Doe 2 was the never identified accomplice or passenger in the truck who rode next to Timothy McVeigh in the infamous Ryder truck, as they delivered and detonated that catastrophic bomb. 24 eyewitnesses on the ground in Oklahoma City, just ordinary people who happened to be there that day, caught glimpses of that Ryder truck with not one man, but two in the truck, and eventually exiting the truck before the bomb went off, creating one of the great mysteries of American crime. Who was John Doe 2?
And people who remember the Oklahoma City bombing will remember that the internet didn't exist in the way it did today. So, you know, today, if you have mistaken identities, or, you know, I think it's just easier to, in this day and age, with the information being posted everywhere, you could have people claiming, oh, I saw this, or giving descriptions. But back then, that availability did not exist. So the likelihood of having 24 eyewitnesses all giving this, you know, description and saying, yes, this individual with the sketch that was given was with Timothy McVeigh, I mean, it's just almost impossible, I would say.
Infinitesimal, absolutely.
Now, was there also, because he was said to, if I remember correctly, have rented the truck with Timothy McVeigh, and there was surveillance video that disappeared. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are. Almost immediately, top journalists began reporting that the FBI had collected videotape showing images of John Doe 2 and Timothy McVeigh. This becomes a thread of my investigation and my book, which is called Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. And of course, the Freedom of Information Act lawsuit for those videotapes that the FBI has never allowed the American public to see becomes a focal point of my investigation and the book. And that landmark lawsuit is still pending today and could one day result in the American public being able to see those images of what actually happened on April 19, 1995.
We are talking with our author of the week, Margaret Roberts, the book Blowback, Untold Story of the FBI and Oklahoma City Bombing. And I'm glad you mentioned it. The stellar host I am jumped right in so quickly, skipped over the important title of the book we're talking with you about. That one of the things that I found about this that I just thought was fascinating and almost inconceivable is all of the different names and people that found themselves caught up in this, one of which is somebody by the name of Kenneth Trentadue. And he apparently could be as much of a victim in all of this as some of those who died on that day back in April 19th of 95. Tell his story, if you would.
You're exactly right. And Kenneth Trentadue's family certainly views him as victim number 169 of the Oklahoma City bombing. And it is an incredible true story. Kenneth Trentadue was a parole violator in California, a prisoner who had served some time in California prison for bank robbery. He was a soldier in the Vietnam War era. Like a lot of soldiers, he came home addicted to heroin, turned to crime. He served his time and he had a falling out with his parole officer over whether as a construction worker he could drink a beer after work. Eventually stopped showing up and became a parole violator. In June of 1995, setting the stage here, this now was just 2 months after the bombing. At that time when, to go back to your memory of people, you know, all over America were being apprehended and questioned as potential John Doe 2 candidates, Kenneth Trentadue was crossing the Mexican border where he had been visiting his wife's family for the weekend when he was stopped at the border and arrested for that old parole violation. He was kept in California waiting a parole violation hearing for a couple of months. And then, and this is the turn in the mystery that is so incomprehensible, then he was suddenly moved to Oklahoma City from Southern California. And 3 days later, he was found in his suicide-proof cell in solitary confinement, tortured and murdered. And in a horrific scene that the orderly who was tasked with cleaning up the cell afterwards called a bloodbath. However, the prison quickly declared this had been a suicide by hanging in a kind of Jeffrey Epstein-like scenario. That began the Trentadue family's crusade for justice for this murdered prisoner. And it becomes entwined in the John Doe 2 story, because Kenneth Trinadu was a dead ringer lookalike for that muscular, tattooed, never identified suspect who rode next to Timothy McVeigh. The story, which I hope your readers will want to dive into in detail, the unraveling of this mystery, is fascinating, and it is triggered, the unraveling is triggered by a message to Kenneth's attorney brother, Jesse Trinadu, from Timothy McVeigh himself on death row in the year 2000, saying that the FBI had murdered Kenneth Trinadu in an interrogation because he resembled a neo-Nazi terror leader by the name of Richard Lee Guthrie, who was an associate of Timothy McVeigh's. And they both resembled Joe, too.
And as people are listening to some of this, and it can sound confusing, and that's why, of course, as much or more than some of the other books that we've talked about in the past, recommend people do get in and read it to sort of figure it all out. Do you think, wait, because we listen to you talk, and some of this you look and you think, is this almost Keystone Cop screw-up stuff where you got the FBI allegedly killing this individual they thought was John Doe number two, or they thought it was someone else, it was a mistaken identity situation, or is it something more nefarious? Is it? Do you have a sense of the overall, I guess, theme on that?
I do. And to pull a thread here to help people, because it is a complicated story that becomes clear as you follow the mystery. The Oklahoma City bombing wasn't an act of lone wolf terror, as prosecutors told the jury, as the news media told the public, and as history books now tell us today. The Oklahoma City was, very disturbingly, more of a scenario of manufactured terror made in Washington, D.C. by the FBI. Now, there is no intention that building had ever blown up, but my investigation, which spans over 20 years and follows this attorney, Jesse Trinadu, through the Freedom of Information Act process, and finally to an FBI whistleblower who comes out of the shadows, this scenario is much more like the Governor Whitmer kidnap plot, where we discover a case full of undercover assets and informants and operatives. And finally, when the whistleblower comes out of the shadows, he reveals that this Nazi terror group, which called itself the Aryan Republican Army, of which this Richard Lee Guthrie was the leader, they were actually, this group, according to the whistleblower, was created by the FBI as a front group to incite right-wing violence. So that begins to explain what really happened here, and why this John Doe 2 mystery man of the bombing, was just essentially disappeared from the case.
Well, people who listen to my show frequently, you mentioning that Gretchen Whitmer case, they know that that's something I've talked about extensively, and about what a clear and obvious setup sort of scenario that was, and sort of the way that you would see reflections of it in January 6th also. So to go back and to hear you reference it in the context of the Oklahoma City bombing, that's really interesting. I'll also mention, you talk about, you mentioned Kenneth Trenadu and the hanging in the cell while in solitary confinement. And when I first, heard his name and learned of that, I thought, well, he was Epstein. But it's my understanding, before the term Epstein existed, there was the term Trenadude.
Absolutely. Kenneth Trenadue's murder became a cause celeb in prisons. And this is every prisoner's worst nightmare, being, you know, having his locked cell invaded in the middle of the night by, a SWAT team, and just, you know, being, you know, beaten, brutalized, and killed without recourse. So you're exactly right. This becomes, in prison, getting Trenadued is, you know, the worst thing that could happen to you. And it became the shorthand for what had happened to Kenneth Trenadue.
I've got just one other question. I say that sometimes I think of another, but then if there are any final thoughts you have as we talk with Margaret Roberts, author of Blowback, The Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing. I think that, well, in fact, there was a documentary that I came across, I think it was released not too long ago, about the Oklahoma City bombing. I thought, oh, this may be interesting. I'm going to learn some new information here. And really, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot. It was pretty much the standard Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, a couple of guys that had absolutely no money whatsoever, somehow financed this thing. Nobody knew how or why. And they were responsible for it. I mean, Timothy McVeigh clearly had some play in this. Now, not Lone Wolf. But what about Terry Nichols? Was he involved in any capacity, or is he someone else that got caught up in this, just by happen chance?
You know, that's a great question. I am the only journalist who has ever interviewed Terry Nichols in Supermax prison in Colorado, where he is serving life without the possibility of parole for his role in the bombing. He is a man of many contradictions. Yes, he was involved with Timothy McVeigh in the bomb plot and the preparations for the bomb. I wish I could say that after viewing him, I know what makes Terry Nichols tick. I don't. I can tell your audience that the man I met in Supermax, who was shrunken, fragile physically, appeared to be racked with guilt for more, actions than he has ever admitted to. Just, you know, a tortured soul. But there's no question that he and McVeigh were deeply involved in this crime. What the picture that comes out, however, is that Timothy McVeigh was not the mastermind of the Oklahoma City bombing. It was a much bigger operation.
Well, and then the second question that I predicted I would think of, do you and your, just all of the information that you have studied and gathered over the decades, if government had not had any involvement whatsoever, any hand in trying to make cases or set up scenarios regarding white supremacist organizations, do you think that the bombing would have occurred?
If they hadn't, that's a great question. I can only tell you that the FBI whistleblower, the undercover operative who comes out of the shadows at the end of Blowback to tell Jesse, his fellow Marine, what was going on in this undercover program, PatCon, which the FBI whistleblower, whose name is John Matthews, told Jesse he believed that Oklahoma City was a PatCon operation. And he told Jesse Trinidou that he knew that the FBI had created this Aryan Republican Army as a front group. So, you know, the scenario suggests that there is a very strong question about whether this bombing, you know, would have happened without the group being created. I will go that far.
Well, has there been any, whether you or anyone else, any pressure on the Trump administration, Pam Bondi? You know, there's been so much focus on releasing the RFK Jr. file, or the RFK files, and the Martin Luther King Jr. files. What about this one?
I'm glad you asked, because certainly this is, we might call this the summer of transparency, right? I mean, this is the big push. Americans, in their DNA, want to know the truth about their country and their story. And that is true of the Oklahoma City bombing, as it is true of Jeffrey Epstein, as it is true of Russiagate. All the hottest stories of the moment seem to boil down to America wants to know the truth. And yes, first of all, this Freedom of Information Act lawsuit is still pending and waiting for the judge's decision. It has been waiting for a decade because of witness tampering charges that were brought by Jesse Trinidou at the trial, when the whistleblower, John Matthews, suddenly dropped out, telling Jesse, dropped out as the star witness, telling Jesse he had been pressured by the FBI and he feared that his handlers would take away his medical benefits and his pension. As he put it, "I don't want to be just another homeless vet living under a bridge." So that huge action is pending, and so is the judge's decision about the surveillance, the release or of the surveillance videotapes. Also, a related and very important matter, Trinidou has a letter on the desk of Attorney General Pam Bondi asking that the Justice Department stand down from resisting unsealing deposition given by that whistleblower, which might lay out the entire scope of this secret FBI PatCon infiltration program. That sounds so much like, as you point out, the Gretchen Whitmer kidnap plot and some other very signal events, including the Boston Marathon bombing, where there are grave questions about whether that older brother who was killed may have himself been an FBI informant. So yes, the push is on, and because of the lawyer at the middle of my book, Blowback, it represents a postmortem of a cover-up of a sort that we may find out was certainly far from one of a kind.
Well, there are two, for me, if there were two cases that I would really, that I hope, get opened up, get looked at, one of them is TWA Flight 800, and the other one has been this one. And so hopefully your book with all this incredible information in it, is going to prod that along to some degree, maybe even faster than that. Our author of the week, Margaret Roberts, the book, I recommend everyone go pick it up. ABC Books North Glenstone, of course, sponsoring our author of the week. The book is Blowback, the Untold Story of the FBI and the Oklahoma City Bombing on Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.